On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. Our guest today is Neil Lemain, who's been in the insurance industry for 38 years, of which 35 at Progressive. He's been the company's business leader of talent acquisition for the last 10 years, and he also leads community involvement efforts too, which we want to talk about as well. Neil, thanks so much for joining us.
Be great to see you or be with you again, and thanks for the opportunity.
Yeah. So Neil, let's talk about you first. Where you know you're? Where are you from originally? Where you grew up? That sort of stuff.
Yeah, I was born in actually New York City and moved to Long Island as a three-year-old and was there until I started high school. And then I finished my high school journey in Marietta, Georgia. So my dad moved to Atlanta for work and I finished up high school there.
Oh, interesting. So you were in Manhattan then when you say New York City? Or
I was born in the borough of the Bronx. And then we moved out to Eastern Long Island, Suffolk County. And then I left literally a couple of weeks before I was about to start high school. We took a transfer to Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, okay. I got some friends who live out there. They say Long Island.
Yep.
It's like long LA
or on yours.
Yeah. So. It's like cutting the grass, Long Island. With a G. I don't know where the G comes from, but anyway. So you're in Georgia. What about your career? So how did this all get going for you?
I went to the University of Georgia. I did not study insurance. I actually studied human resources, but they did have a University of Georgia does have a very good risk management program.
Yeah, they do.
But it was a local school. The reputation was great. The tuition was very manageable. And I finished, got my bachelor's degree. And then while I was in college, I actually had a job offer from Aetna. We'll come back to that in just a second. And I actually turned it down right before I was graduating college because I wanted to see if I could pursue work in my field. So we're talking here around 1986 at the time, which was HR. Mm-hmm. And the market was very competitive in Atlanta. There are many headquarters and regional headquarters there in Atlanta. I didn't find as many entry-level jobs there that fit what I was looking for. So I actually went back to Aetna and asked to be reconsidered, and I was hired. And I actually worked for Aetna from 87 to 90, and I actually was handling attorney rep bodily injury claims. So I started in their claims organization. Mm-hmm. About 1990, I wanted to broaden my skill set in handling claims now that I had 3 years under my belt there. And I went out and competed with several insurance companies. And keep in mind, this is when Aetna had a property and casualty business. You and I know them as a health carrier today, but back then they had a P&C business.
They did.
But I applied about six or seven different companies. Three made an offer. One of those offers was Progressive Insurance. And they kind of stood out for me because they just had this feel that I was going to be able to drive, you know, my own bus in terms of my career. And they were fascinated with the work I was doing at Aetna in that I was kind of a specialist handling these attorney rep bodily injury claims. And they were looking to kind of maybe move from a generalist model to a more specialist model, at least for injury handling. So it made for an interesting conversation during the interviews. Ultimately, I was offered a job. I accepted it. 35 years later, I've had 11 different roles in 10 different Progressive locations.
Mm, interesting. You know, it's this is a precursor to what we're going to get into later, but young people could look at the insurance industry as any other business where there's tons of different jobs, including HR. So if you went back in time, were you thinking of Aetna or were they thinking of you as as an HR career, or was it more like we want you as an underwriter or claim specialist or whatever?
Yeah, definitely the latter, Pete. It was more of a, you know, how do I advance in the claims world? And actually was starting to get cross-training and doing, you know, homeowner property claims. But Aetna at the time was starting to struggle financially, you know, based on some of their product lines. I know you're a hockey fan. They used to own, had, or at least had part ownership in the Hartford Whalers.
Nice.
And that was causing them financial issues as well. So I kind of saw the writing on the wall. I didn't want to be laid off. Mm-hmm. Progressive was growing and it seemed like it was a good opportunity. I hated to leave, but I needed to pursue some different things in my career.
Yeah. Now I haven't been on I'm sure there are many campuses, but the one in Cleveland, I was there like 25 years ago. And one thing that struck me was how it felt more like a college campus, more like at that time, you know, we didn't have all the tech we have today, but there was a lot of tech, a tech feel to it. Like it was pretty cool. So, but you said you had a feeling. What are you doing? So you went there. How did your role evolve so much? And talk to about what you're doing today, because it's a massive responsibility, at least from what you've told me in the past.
Yep. I would kind of characterize my career in three stages. One was the claims era, right? So from 1990 to about 2000, I was definitely in claims operations. And actually the last role that I had was the, you know, business leader for handling the claims organization in downstate New York. So we had Long Island, New York City, Westchester County, you know, et cetera. Through life circumstances, I made a decision to, hey, I really want to pursue something I went to school for. I was passionate about human resources, and I had a chance to, you know, enter a kind of a field human resources role supporting the claims organization. So it made for a good match because I had all this experience in claims. I had a background in human resources, and I really enjoyed the role. And then, so that was phase two. And then phase three, you know, primarily where I've really been for the last 15 years are these corporate HR roles. I led our talent management organization, which included the company's diversity, equity, inclusion efforts. And back in 2015, I assumed responsibilities for our talent acquisition group. I also have the community involvement for the company as well. And so there are a lot of ties to, you know, the efforts there in terms of how we brand ourselves as an employer. So, but all in all, the roles each time was about picking up some critical experiences. The different locations gave me a diverse perspective of what work was like in different parts of the country. I lived in, you know, four different states. Many different business groups, and like I said, a lot of different roles. So each gave me a new perspective or a new skill or a new experience that I didn't have. And I think that's critical for today's worker. Do as many different things as you can. You really become a lot more valuable to the employer over time. And you get a lot more intrinsic reward because you're able to do so many things where you're making a difference.
I think, Neil, I've heard you say that HR is like coaching sports. Why do you say that?
When you think of the elements, and you know, I'll defer to my favorite, which is college football. When you think about it, it's about recruiting and attracting and, you know, signing new talent. It's about onboarding and developing that talent. A big part of sports is about coaching that talent. And at the end of the day, it's how you reward and recognize that talent. And those are similar traits that go on in a business every day. Right, you hire new employees, you onboard them, you coach them, develop them, and you know, you reward them. And so there's a lot of overlap. And I always would say, you know, sports is a microcosm of society, but there's a lot of parallels. And you know, I played sports when my kids were of age. I coached sports, but there's a lot of traits that you learn in terms of particularly leadership that carry over from coaching into leading in a company setting.
What do you think about, you mentioned Progressive felt different, and it is known for a distinctive culture. I felt it when I was there, as I mentioned. What do you think makes it so unique and effective. What did you experience as you grew in your time there? I mean, so many decades, and has it evolved? What stayed the same? Maybe what's evolved?
I think what has stayed the same, and let me back up and you answer the distinct culture. Why is it so distinctive? They have a clearly defined set of core values that goes back all the way into the 70s, attributed to our first CEO, Peter B. Lewis. By the way, Progressive has only had 3 CEOs in its history, and it's a company that started in 1937. But what you learn pretty early on that Progressive folks tend to thrive in the environment and stay a long time. You know, when you talk to folks, I've been here 15 years, I've been here 20. You know, we're talking today, I've been here 35 years. It's very relationship building oriented. There's a lean in terms of thinking and leading inclusively. So there are a lot of things that where people thrive and have the ability to kind of, you know, really move forward in their career and their life and have an opportunity to contribute. But this core values has stayed with us. It's, you know, a lot of times we'll sit in rooms and we'll say, solving a business problem, we'll say, what would our core values expect us to do? You know, one of the things, for example, we're very transparent. You know, it ladders up into one of the, you know, the 5 core values, the notion of transparency. But each month, Progressive reports out on its results. We don't wait quarterly like many companies do. So just that notion. So there's a lot of unique things. Many companies talk about core values. Many of them have it. But I was always amazed about the discipline Progressive had is kind of really centering everything around it and then maintaining it. And think about, so when you say what's new today, it's like, how do I have close to 10,000 leaders, and how do I instill them leading with a lean and a lens of core values? Those present some new unique challenges in today's environment.
Yeah. Well, that's really good to hear, because I'm a big believer in core values. Words have consequences. And if it starts at the top and it's enthusiastically embraced at the top and shared around the organization, they really can be powerful. It's not just something you hang up in the wall in the old lunchroom, you know, and you have to instill them. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a lot of conversations to your point there where we'll talk about the 5, you know, integrity, golden rule, objectives, excellence, and even profit. And we'll talk about it, what it means to you as an employee, what it means when we're interacting with our customers, what it means to when we're talking to, you know, our shareholders, investors, our vendor partners. It's really unique how every day it's woven into what we're doing on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how has the company grown in terms of the employee group? How many were there when you joined, and how many are there today, and what kind of interest do you create in the marketplace for people applying?
When I started in 1990, I believe we were, you know, give or take 8,000. I would imagine we'll end this year, if we were recording on December 31st, we'll be over 70,000. So you think about it, that's almost a 9-fold growth in my 35 years here. We have a strong brand. People are very interested in the type of things that Progressive invests in, the type of work we do. And give or take, we're about 800,000 applications a year. And that's a lot. We hire on average maybe 20 to 25, but that always varies depending on, you know, market conditions and growth patterns. So it tends to be a very competitive pool. And as you can see, we have way more applications than we're able to, you know, we can't hire everyone, unfortunately, but so it is very competitive.
Mm-hmm. So is it mostly inbound, or are you also out searching yourself in this landscape?
Both. You know, a couple of things. You've got a, you know, your typical entry-level jobs for which we have a strong attraction based on our brand and our culture. Progressive has a very long-standing disposition of a lot of internal movement. I remember one year alone, I had 2 different jobs in 2 different locations, and never once did Progressive say, you have to do this. It was like, hey, here's an opportunity. Is there interest? But we also, there are times where we may be looking for skill sets and experiences that may or may not exist currently at that moment in time. And we do have a kind of robust process for going out there and proactively sourcing for candidates who may not have thought about Progressive as a career. And it gives us an opportunity to have a dialogue and say, you know, here's what we're about and here's the role. And we liked what you have from a skills and experience perspective. Is there an interest in applying? So we do that regularly.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you feel, Neil? This may be more rhetorical, but I know there's been a lot of pressure on the classic four-year school and the requirement that a particular job have, you know, a bachelor degree, BA or BS or whatever. Do you see that evolving? I know you're very interested in helping young people coming out, you know, all walks of life. We can talk about the Invest program in a little while, but I'm just curious how that's going to shake out, because there's a lot of really, and I met many when I was coaching high school lacrosse at my girls' high school. I met a lot of them who were never going to a 4-year school, maybe community college, but their parents are both working. They were raising their siblings. It just wasn't in the cards financially and time wise. But yet I knew these were really great kids. Like maybe they could go work at a local independent agency, but what do you think as you know, a big company guy, how do you look at that?
There's no doubt the jobs are evolving today, where there are definitely some jobs that, you know, a bachelor's degree is, you know, very much needed. But we're learning over time that you can substitute years of valuable work experience. You know, when you think about how people learn on the job, 70% is on the job, 20% is through others, 10% is through formal learning. So you can find in many jobs, there is a suitable translation for a degree in terms of number of years of work experience. And that could be a bachelor's degree from a university. That also could be an associate's degree from many of our colleges. There are also technical schools out there that provide skills and experiences. So I think it is definitely role dependent. I do think that companies have done a good job measuring, hey, X amount of work years experience is a really good suitable exchange for some educational experience. And we seem to have gotten good with a good balance to call out. Mm-hmm. That if you don't have a, you know, degree, here are some the work experience and how much do you need. You couple that with good foundational onboarding and functional training, you definitely can have a prosperous career with or without it. Mm-hmm. Are there some roles, maybe an accountant, you know, so you eventually get that CPA, maybe for the attorneys that we hire, you know, going to law school. But there definitely are many jobs where definitely has a large plethora of transferable skills. And I think you can get a good mix of years of experience in lieu of school. You can get a combination. So I think the market has changed and Progressive has shifted pretty well in that regard.
Okay. Before, well, actually, the millennials started this trend, but I think the pandemic certainly accelerated it. And that is this idea of working at home and maybe some sense of hybrid work. And I wonder, you know, it just seems to be, I'm not saying Progressive is in this camp, but, you know, I read in the Wall Street Journal a lot of stories about how companies are pushing back. It's this push and pull between coming in and not coming in. I want to get back to the office, but not every day. And it just seems like employee expectations have evolved. And the other piece is culture. It's one thing if you've been there, I mean, you've been there so long, Neil, so you understand and embrace the culture, obviously, and you have all those relationships. But if you're newer in your career, you never get to meet your folks or rarely meet them that you're working with. Is that an issue from a culture? What is your lens on all that?
Yeah, we definitely see it and feel it. And I think coming out of the pandemic, I thought Progressive did something that was really you know, cool in this, you know, current climate, which was give folks an opportunity to come back into, you know, a more conducive work environment if they wanted to. We had remodeling a lot more collaboration rooms, upgraded technology, made sure, you know, our real estate footprint had, you know, safe and collaborative spaces to work in. But folks got a taste of, you know, being able to contribute in a remote environment. And so we kind of let our employees, we watched over a considerable period of time how many folks are coming in. And we learned that, hey, folks could do their job and do it really well from both environments. So, you know, we have some folks who have never come back into an office. We have some folks who come in, you know, in a hybrid type of environment based on, you know, their work, their role, their location. And then we have some folks who whose job really needs them to be there on a daily basis. And I would say the recipe for success was that through our core values and what we expect from our culture is, regardless of where you work, you've got to be intentional about maintaining the culture, understanding that now this culture has challenges that not everybody is in a, you know, kind of a work location. And there's value to being there every day. But frankly, in our technology environment today, you can be just as successful. You can collaborate with the current technology tools that we have. You may have to think differently how you structure your day. I mean, like, hey, I haven't talked to Peter in a while. How about I set up time and we catch up versus, you know, we used to see each other on a, you know, maybe an every other day basis when we were, you know, live. So the word isn't, you know, I would say, I would describe it as been a differentiator is intentional. You've got to be intentional in this environment, particularly if you're going to be remote, if you want to maintain the same culture you had prior to the pandemic.
Yeah. So, Neil, this notion, you said it earlier about, you know, go out and get yourself, if you're starting in your career, the value of trying different things and just throwing yourself out there. I've been trying to help some younger, not to pick on the Gen Zs, but I've been trying to help some younger ones get out there. And I've noticed this feeling that, my parents always helped me, snowplow the way to my... whatever it was, the particular school I was going to get into, and now it's maybe a job, or they might have, because they just, because of the pandemic and just the way the world has shifted, that they don't know how to, quote, like, this is me talking, it's not Neil talking, this is like how to work, like how to, what work is, like how to be professional, how to look somebody in the eye and shake their hand, how to write an email, how, what not to text people. And it's sort of like, I feel like they need help and I feel like they have a lot to contribute, but like somebody needs to be the adult in the room. You know, it's just weird. But regardless of the age, I wanted to ask you, you've said something about, and this is related, but the idea that how to compete for work, what does that look like? How do you explain that to people?
Yeah, and I think regardless of, you know, the age and the generation, what we're seeing today is labor markets and application pools, they're made up of folks that are very competitive. Many folks bring a lot of things to the table. So the first thing notion is the labor market, super competitive, people coming from different work experiences, educational experiences, et cetera. So when you think about your competing for a role is, how do I demonstrate based on what the company and or the job is looking for, how my experiences and skills translate? Now that sounds simpler than it is, but there are folks who struggle with the ability to do that. They have it, but they've got to be able to demonstrate it in the form of, here's an example where I've been able to show this particular experience or skill successfully. When you're interviewing, companies are looking for, they're trying to picture, hey, if I hire Neil for this role, how will that look in this situation? So there's where you have the ability to demonstrate. So, you know, part of it is your ability to tell your story in an interview. And while getting a job is not only about just how you interview, it's also, you can do other things to show and demonstrate the value you may bring to the company. Again, it's all centered around, I have, you know, these experiences, these skills, these knowledges, and I bring this to the table. And then in a very competitive market, the best of the best do one, I think, key thing is they kind of show what they bring new and different to the role. So let's say we all have the same skill of being able to, you know, interview customers, you know, after a claim. But all of us have had a history of maybe handling auto claims. You know, maybe one individual comes in and says, hey, in addition, you know, I've also handled, you know, homeowners claims. And so sometimes a good tiebreaker, somebody who can demonstrate, in addition to what you're looking for the job, here's what else I also bring. Maybe I was a previous leader in another organization, and maybe I'm applying for this claim rep job, but in the future, I could be a leader in your company. So it's that notion of new and different. I know folks get very disappointed when they are turned down, and their mind tends to think about, wow, I was qualified for this job, and you know, I have, you know, these things to offer. Other people may too, and they may even have even more. So sometimes it's not only you're not only competing against yourself, but you're also competing against other talented individuals. And you know, just like in sports, sometimes, you know, on a given Saturday, Sunday, or whatever, only one team is going to win. So, you know, we all have been in a job where we got the job. That means we competed at the highest level in light of the other people that were in the pool. So this notion of, and this is where I think, you know, high schools and colleges and employers working with workers of all ages, just this notion, hey, the market is very competitive. Your ability to pick up different skills and experiences make you more valuable and more competitive. So it's, you know, how do I demonstrate it? How do I tell my story? And how do I carve out what else did I bring that's new and different and valuable?
Yeah, that's good advice. I'll try to remember that next time I'm quote, trying to mentor these young folks. So it related to that, how are you seeing work changing at Progressive? How you mentioned you guys do a good job of having people change jobs. I actually knew a great guy who worked at Progressive years ago, Chris Garson. He used to work in the independent agent side in technology, and really, really interesting guy. He's written some books. He said, "Hey, Pete, I got a new role. I'm going over on the direct side." I'm like, "But you're so talented. Like, how does that even work?" He goes, "This is how we do things." So I thought that was really cool. It's kind of like breaking things that don't seem to be broken, just so that we continue to learn and not to get too stale and complacent. I think that's really sharp. Maybe that's, again, that's just me talking. But what do you think, what skills do you think might be undervalued that might be really essential given what's happening with technology alone? I'm sure Progressive's really spending a lot of time thinking about how AI would impact it. But do you think you've seen some things that could work for the next 5-10 years with the workforce?
Yeah, if you think about where companies are challenged today in the terms of quote unquote where work is heading, and it's, you know, not going to be any different for Progressive than many other companies, I think the winners in the market are those who adapt and, you know, continuously, you know, improve. But, you know, you hit on one of them. Digital transformation is going to be a big part. You know, more and more work can be done with a, you know, digital technology. The notion of flexibility, and it's more than just where I work, it's like when I work, how long that I work. You know, there are folks who, hey, they can come in on a limited part-time basis maybe, and, you know, contribute, you know, 10 or 20 hours towards, you know, a particular project. So this definitely, this kind of quote-unquote gig autonomy is going to be real as people kind of move in and out of different assignments and do different things for which their skills, experiences, and interests gravitate. So how does companies adjust to the fact that people can do work at different times, different locations? I think that is a challenge that successful companies are navigating. Listen, the needs for different products and services, when you think about a diverse consumer basis in terms of their preferences and likes and, you know, purchasing powers, there's definitely a need to create folks who can think similar to, you know, what the changing needs of products and services are. So there's always going to be a need for new skills are needed for these products, new experiences are needed for these products. You know, let's say, for example, I move from, you know, a traditional auto product and I want to sell pet insurance. You know, other folks who understand, you know, how to price and handle claims and think about marketing, you know, to our, you know, four-legged, you know, loved ones there. So, you know, just having that mindset of what else is growing in terms of products and services based on what our, you know, our consumers or customers are asking. And I think the last one is, I do think the external environment is also a critical key when you think about what's going on outside of our walls and how does that impact our employees? How does it impact our customers in terms of how we think about products and services? So you're always going to have that kind of that outside lens of what's going on and how do we translate that to continue to thrive and bring value. So I think those are key skills and experiences that are companies, and it really just centers around things are evolving fast, whether it's technology, the environment, you know, different products and services, et cetera. How do you stay up with change? And I think that's a big skill, continuous improvement, navigating constant change, being flexible and agile. Those are going to be successful traits, employees and or companies of the future.
Yeah, I know it's interesting how the insurance industry in general, again, not saying progressive, but it is somewhat of an echo chamber. I mean, it's some very, very highly talented people who work in the industry, but I think that outside lens is going to be even more important.
Good point.
It's just going to be like kind of, you know, the one thing that stays the same is your core values you mentioned over decades. But, you know, using those I look at core values as almost like the only HR manual you really need. There are, you know, getting outside those four walls is critical to see what's going on in the world. And that's why InsurTechs, they finally cracked the industry open a little bit. At first it was like, you guys don't know anything about the business, so go out and learn insurance, then come back and let's talk after you pivot. I think we're at that point where it's been very helpful to have that. That's just one example of sort of an outside lens, as you mentioned.
If you think about it based on that example, it's almost like, hey, it's a combination of not only what you do, but how you do it. So if you're leveraging your core values to be your foundation, how you do it, what you do evolves in terms of what's going on in terms of the needs of your customers and how they evolve in terms of their products and services needs.
Yeah, the how. Mm-hmm. I love it. Okay, so I first met you, Neil, I guess, what was it, 7-8 years ago or something?
Yeah, about 8 years now.
Yeah, we were on the Big Eyes Invest program, board of directors. I'm still on. You're still involved as a company, and I know you keep yourself involved as well in it. I wonder, I've been associated with Invest because I used to work at the association years ago, and I always loved it. So I guess I've been involved with it 30, 35 years now in some way. Now I'm much closer to it. What's been your take on the value of the whole cause? And I know it's something you speak about a lot. You have a lot of passion for, you know, the making the industry more interesting as an employee brand to the great unwashed young worker out there. Invest plays a role. But why do you have such a passion for this cause?
I think it's kind of almost two or threefold, right? So Progressive's connection to the Big I stems from the independent agent channel is a big part of our ecosystem. You know, it's where Progressive made its early starts going way back in the day. And, you know, today it's one, if not the largest carrier, leveraging the, you know, the independent agent. So the independent agent clearly plays a critical role in the transaction, particularly on how people, you know, buy and get service from insurance. So the commitment, the partnership over the years, the Invest is, you know, kind of mission talks about how do we continuously attract new generations of folks interested in the, you know, insurance industry as a whole. And, you know, for example, you take their partnership with DECA. And as a high school student, I was in DECA. So I saw the value of making connections with businesses in terms of how I can further, you know, even just growing as a person, as well as, you know, being able to compete successfully as a future employee. But I think the insurance industry touches many areas of the spectrum. When you think about insurance companies as a whole, the ability to make a difference in communities, you think about our commodity is we're insuring things we love, right? So we all value whether it's a car or a person, you know, our house, our pet, etc., and our ability to protect those things that we love. That's what insurance is about. The commodities, it's not like we're building a widget or building something hard and tangible. You're building, you know, a promise to be there when you need it. You're protecting something you love. And for the times where something may have gone awry, you're there to kind of help them get back on their feet. So this notion of you get to make a difference in this industry resonates a lot with folks, particularly, you know, today's, you know, Gen Z generation. So, and because they really want to see how they can not only contribute out there on their jobs, but they also how they contribute differently in society. So just all of this kind of ladders up as to where the big guy was wanting to help attract, you know, this notion I'm in recruiting, whether I'm a business leader or an actual recruiter, this passion about attracting new talent, regardless of age, you know, to the company, all kind of laddered up. And, you know, that's where the intersection started to form for me. It was natural. I believed in it. I believe in the industry. I believe the young folks, new folks wanting to be a new, start a new career, need help in terms of how to compete. So all of this kind of laddered up nicely. And so it felt natural to have some, a lot of participation.
Yeah, that's great. You mentioned DECA. Can you explain a little bit about what that is? I have a sense of it, being that Invest is now really partnering closely with DECA.
Yeah, it's kind of connecting students in different organizations. Mostly you see it in high school with businesses. It's how they, you know, work in the communities and learn how the different businesses in their communities operate. And they learn some skills while they're in high school that are transferable. So it kind of gives them something outside of your, you know, your core, you know, math, science, history, English. It gives them some, you know, connections to the outside world, particularly the business. So it's an organization. You'll do things in the community. There's a community giving aspect to it. But it's centered around connecting students to businesses.
Yeah. And it's a lot of marketing and finance type great management. Point. Yeah, it's a perfect dovetail with what Invest is, which is providing some insurance education to high school and community college, mostly community college and students. Okay. So Neil, I want to end with a set of questions, getting back to, as you reflect back on a really interesting career. And it's just really nice to have somebody who's done what you've done for so long and still connected to how younger folks could get involved in the industry. So are there things that you, a belief, say, or beliefs that you had early in your career that you've since changed your mind about?
You know, I grew up in the generation where there was the perception of how one gets ahead. And, you know, you hear frequently, humorously, people talk about the grind. And, you know, over time, what you really come to appreciate and respect that it's really about the relationships you build, right? How to learn from others. And it's not just about the amount of hours you put in. It's how are you making a difference? What can you learn from others? How do you can give back and coach? So I think from a career, you start to realize that, hey, my successes came from folks whom I interacted with who were willing to pay it forward. And I think as I get through the tail end of my career, I've become more centered about how I paid forward. And so I think there's where a lot of how my career has centered. It's less become the grind and how many hours you put in. It's more about the people whom you interact with, whether a customer or a fellow colleague, and how do you give back? And I think that has been a big evolution in my career.
How about some missteps along the way that you learned from? Anything you can share there?
I like to tell my group every day I'm making some type of mistake. And basically, when you have a growth mindset, you're always thinking, you know, what can I be doing better? So versus like pointing to one major thing, I look at is, hey, there were a lot of things on a daily basis I could have been doing differently. I have a comical saying that I have with my team. I call it my mistake garbage pail. I'd fill it up regularly, I'm just good about knowing where to empty it and starting over again and, you know, regrouping because I'm human. Every day that I'm learning, I'm going to make some mistakes. And as long as I don't keep repeating those mistakes. So I like to say that every day I'm a work in progress. So the mistake garbage pail is a great, you know, comical analogy there about probably making mistakes every day versus, you know, I had this one big one.
Yeah.
And you just get good about, hey, what did you learn from it? And how do I get better about it?
Yeah, it's an interesting way to reflect, you know, because everybody, if you read somebody's bio on LinkedIn, it's like there are no mistakes. Everybody's perfect. Everybody has a perfect picture, perfect title, perfect things. They have everybody saying great things about them. And, you know, they're humans like you are too. You and
that's
I
are. Right.
And so, yeah, if you think about it, maybe that's, I'm going to steal that if you don't mind, Neil. I like the mistake garbage pail. Can I get like a really large one? Can I get one that you put outside at the street?
We'll give you the 94-gallon version.
Yeah, I'm not looking for like a little garbage can in the bathroom. I need a.
There you go.
But yeah, so and how about mentors? Was there anybody or any number of people in your life that made a difference in your career path?
You heard me earlier talk about relationships. So there will be in my life, there'll be no one singular person that may. It's a culmination of a lot of different folks. And if you think about it, as you go through time, and I start thinking about, you know, I really learned a lot watching so-and-so or listening to that conversation, or for the 6 months I was on that person's team and we got a chance to interact, or maybe a manager who I reported to for a couple of years. I'm always extracting, what did I gain and learn from that person that I can put in my own toolkit today? Versus just centering, hey, this one person, you know, if you read or you, you know, watch a lot of things on, you know, in the media, if you are participating in a lot of activities in your community and or you know, doing a lot of things at work, you're constantly learning from others. And listen, let's also be true is the opposite to me is true as well, is that you also learn sometimes what not to do. And so as you see it, how it plays out. So I would say I've had a lot of mentors who helped me along the way by just watching what they do and what I could take away. And then thinking about how I can fit it in as to me as a person. How do I kind of fit that in terms of my style? So I would say many people in my life have been mentors.
Yeah, that's great. That's good. That means your eyes were open, which is another good advice for folks, you know, looking about their first job or their 10th job is, you know, keep your eyes open, learn from others, right? I mean, you can't have your head down all the time. Okay. Last question. Is there a mantra or some kind of statement or piece of advice you've gotten that's guided you or maybe you created on your own?
It definitely won't be one that I created on my own, but it's one that has resonated with me for 35 years. And it comes from Peter B. Lewis, our first CEO. He talked about risk, learn, grow. And if you think about our conversation today, there were many times in my career that I had to take risks. We talked, you know, genuinely just a few minutes ago about the art of making mistakes and learning from them. And that's really how you grow. And I think, you know, why I look at where I am today versus Neil 35 years ago, a lot of them stem from, I grew a lot from the risk I took and what I learned from them, both what was successful and what didn't work. So I've always just kept it simple. It's one of my favorite mantras. I don't take any credit for it originally, obviously, Peter B. Lewis, but risk, learn, grow.
That's terrific, man. I think that's perfect. And, you know, I have to say, Mr. Lewis, who I had the chance to meet one time, really interesting guy. That's really if I think of progressive, I think that's also a good mantra for the company. Maybe that's what he meant originally, but it's very personal, but it also, to me, applies to progressive. That you guys take risks. You're always learning. You're always, obviously you're growing. It shows in the financials and how you take market share from others. So Great job, Neil. I know you played a big role in the company's success over the years, but also it's been great to know you over these years as well. Not that you're going anywhere, but on a personal level, it's been fun too. So thank you very much for all you've shared, and I look forward to seeing you again soon.
Appreciate the opportunity, and just wanted to give you a personal shout out just for all the things that you are doing in the industry and the community and the differences you've made in the lives of others. So same back at you, my friend.
Thank you, brother. We'll talk soon.
You bet. Thank you.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Artrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.